It's reasonable for the court to look at the evidence before it, even not taking into account any statements by Ms. Victor or any information that she obtained from Mr. Wu, and say it's more probable than not that this was in fact what was presented at the mediation. The promissory note was there. The states are all the day, all the same date. They're all notarized the same date. It's a reasonable assumption for the court to make when weighing the evidence that this was in fact presented at the time of the mediation.
When do the participants in this process get the mediator's statement?
Currently, they get the mediator's statement after it has been sent to the foreclosure mediation program.
They don't have the opportunity to say, wait a minute, this box wasn't checked, that the note was not presented at the mediation?
No, and I think, for myself, I think that's a flaw. I think that you should have a chance to say, this is what I believe the mediator's statement should look like, and these are my rebuttals to it, as it were, is to be able to say, the mediator checked the box saying my document certification wasn't sufficient, and then be able to respond and say, my document certification was sufficient, all of the endorsements are contained on the note itself, I don't need a separate certification for each endorsement of the note. I think that would save a lot of time. It would also make a better record for the court in the long run, because then you would have the fresh recollections.
And then on the flip side of that, you would have a statement by Mr. Fox that certified copy of the note was not produced at the mediation. I never saw it there. So you should note, Mr. Mediator and Ms. Mediator, that that was an omission.
Correct, because this is set up, the PJR hearings are set up like an administrative review of an administrative hearing, except it's not an administrative review of an administrative hearing. It's an administrative review of a confidential mediation.
So you have no
record. We have no testimony. We have no record. We have a bad case of he said, she said. And in a lot, you know, sometimes it works to our favor, sometimes it works to their favor, sometimes it works to everybody's favor because we work it out in the long run. But I think that would be a great help to everyone, is to be able to make those rebuttals and know what's going on. Now, it's important to note in this case,
whose burden should it be to establish that everything was produced at the mediation?
I would like to say the borrower's burden. I think it's an equal burden. I think that the mediator's job is to follow the instructions of this court. And if the instructions of this court is that the borrower has to provide financials 10 days in advance, because going to mediation without financials 10 days in advance is fruitless, then if that's a strict compliance rule, then that's a strict compliance rule, and the mediator should note there were no financials exchanged 10 days prior.
What about no certified note 10 days prior?
The certification would have substantial compliance
for your protection and strict compliance.
Actually, I would, because whether or not the note is produced, it doesn't impact the ability to run the numbers and provide a financial workup. We can argue about what time the note is produced, whether the note is valid, whether the note establishes standing. That can be argued pre-mediation, post-mediation, in a different court outside of mediation. There are a number of forums to argue that. But the point of the program as to whether the borrower qualifies for a modification requires that we have sufficient information before we walk in the door to sit down and say, here are the numbers. Here's why you don't qualify, or here's why you do qualify, or here's what you need to qualify. I've attended a number of mediations, and a lot of the times you sit down and you have to do the math with people and say, okay, here's your budget. Here's why it doesn't work. Did you account for the fact that your house is 30 years old and you have a shingle roof and you're going to need a new roof?
Right, but on the other side of it, looking at it from the other perspective, it may be a situation where the foreclosure can't proceed because there are defects in the paperwork, and from the perspective of the homeowner, that's something that they would want to develop, because the point of the proceeding from their vantage point is perhaps this is not something that should proceed to foreclosure, non-judicial foreclosure, because the paperwork is not in order. So, I mean, it seems to me it's hard to justify one set of standards for one side when you get to rule-imposed requirements and another set for the other side.
Now, I'm not saying there are different areas that should be addressed with strict and substantial compliance. We had a slightly different situation in this because this NOD was done prior to the AB 284 affidavit, which establishes essentially standing to foreclose.
Do any of the mediators allow the parties to see the statement before they sign it, like to say, are there any additions or corrections to the mediator's statement?
Yes, many will let you see it, and you can make your arguments for points that you would like on it. However, it's up to the individual mediator whether or not they want to include those points.
And this did not happen in this case.
I was not present, so I couldn't tell you. Again, counsel says that Mr. Mack seems to be a fair mediator. I don't see a number of his petitions before the court. I don't see anything that indicates there is any irregularity in the process. When this mediation was held, we had a slightly different set of rules. They'd just come out with the issue regarding the endorsements. Looking at this, is there standing to foreclose? I think based on what was before the district court, it's pretty clear when you go to that hearing and you look at the note, the deed of trust, the assignments, that the standing to foreclose was established, if not at the mediation, as the mediator suggests, then at the petition for judicial review, as the court said. So as to that issue, I think that it's addressed. As to whether or not he was reviewed significantly for a modification changes, financials change. Mr. Crosby isn't arguing that he was not reviewed for modification. He was reviewed. What Mr. Crosby is arguing is we don't like the way the review came out, and we think it should have been done differently.
The representative would have the authority to negotiate on behalf of BAC and the loan servicing.
And in our opinion is that, yes, he did. He had the authority to look at it and see if there was anything that they could do that would help. The situation in this case, and it gets very factually driven, we have a house that was admittedly worth $60,000 at the time, had a $250,000 note. We have a self-employed individual making roughly $3,000 a month, without accounting for taxes to be taken out of that. My client looked at it and said, there's not a modification that's a good fit here.
So the principal balance was $250 at the time?
That would have been the entire payoff on the loan at the time was approximately $250. That's the figure that Mr. Crosby used. Since I wasn't present at the mediation, I want to defer to the gentleman who was present. That's the figure he used in his pleadings, that it was $250. Mr. Crosby himself admits that a modification would be difficult in these circumstances. This is what I would consider to be a high-risk modification with a low chance of success because of the huge discrepancy between payoff value and then the fluctuating nature of self-employment income.
As far as a short sale alternative, that nobody was able to discuss a short sale at the mediation other than give a phone number to, I guess, the short sale department of the bank, or what happened there?
What the record reflects is that we said there's no modification, would you like to discuss alternatives? They said, well, we're not really interested in alternatives. So, well, we've got an 800 number for you. And from there, the record goes to, I wouldn't be a good attorney if I just took an 800 number and walked away. There's no indication in the record that anyone went back and forth and said, well, instead of just giving you the number and saying, dealing with it without sign of mediation, how about you give me 90 days to short sell? Offers work both ways. Our offer was, here's a phone number, you can call us outside of mediation. Doesn't Mr. Crosby have a duty to counteroffer in a mediation setting and say, how about you give us 6 months to short sell? We can come back and say, how about we give you a month? This is how mediations work. Mm-hmm. The record reflects, indeed, throughout the record, it's permeated with, I want to keep the house. That I want a different number is, look, see, they didn't have authority because they wouldn't even let me try to short sell them.
We're in a short sale, just out of curiosity, I'm going to take your time up there. Wouldn't the bank have to set up a rule when you do a principal reduction of X amount of dollars to facilitate the short sale? Doesn't that have to be agreed to make it happen, or how does that work?
Generally, in the short sale process, what happens is we ask you to list the home. The banks don't ask or dictate a price initially. We haven't been in the home. We don't know if you have the nicest home in the neighborhood or the worst one. We trust you to hire a good realtor and pick a price point because that's going to be your more accurate one. We don't want to dictate, we think it should be $150. Turns out you have the best house. It should really be $175 because, of course, they're going to come in and offer one for you. once you get an offer on it, if it's market value, it's where it should be, then we send in someone to appraise the property and see if we agree with it. If we, in fact, agree with it, then we're going to look at the financials and see, is this a strategic default? Can you really afford the house and you don't want to? Can you contribute to this to make the loss less? What are the circumstances surrounding that? If everybody can reach a point, we can pay off the HOAs, second mortgages, everyone's happy, the short sale gets approved. It's a fairly lengthy process depending on how many other parties are involved. We have a lot of sewer liens, we have a lot of water liens, we have a lot of HOA liens. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Please, the court, Bill Crosby, representing the homeowner. There's a lot to respond to. First of all, the standard for production of a note, whether it be original or certified, is a strict standard. It's not substantial compliance. You've got to comply with it. You've already ruled that. Now, if you'll allow me to take just a moment and give you some additional information that I think will be very helpful in putting all this into perspective, and then I'll respond to what actually happened at the mediation. The bank respondent states the certifying party herein certified that the attached certified copy, as the language indicates on the copy, was a copy of the original in her possession. Okay, and we look at that and we see, I am in actual possession of the original mortgage note, the attached copies, in my actual possession is a copy, true and correct copy of the original, which is in my possession. I declare under penalty of perjury. What happened here was that when this certification left Texas, signed and notarized on the penalty of perjury by Ms. Wilton, it had nothing attached. It got to the office of Cooper Castle, and date 76, Ms. Richter says, correct, Your Honor, Cooper Castle, where the attorneys who attended the mediation had two copies of the note in the file. The one that was sent over with the referral, which was the copy created out of the time of mediation, and then they had the current original copy. They had two copies. They, Cooper Castle, inadvertently attached the note created at or near the time of the origination of the document sent. They realized it, they corrected it at mediation by providing it to the mediator. I was never aware that there was any correct document provided to the mediator. But what we see here, the rules express a great deal of concern for the integrity of the certification process. It's required that it be under oath, that it be in penalty of perjury, that it be exact, that they have the original, they certify to that, and that the copy attached is a correct copy. That's required by the rules.
Mr. Crosby, so when you went to the mediation, you're saying you didn't know they provided another note to the mediator?
I did not, and I made that clear, and a word or two makes a difference in what is stated here. I did not have it, my notes didn't have it, and I've indicated in the transcript, I did not see it. But what happened here was the local law firm took the sworn statement that did not have a note attached, and they attached to another file. And it's like, whoops, we attached the wrong one. That was Ms. I don't know the name, but it was a local law firm.
I have an additional 2 minutes. You're out of time.
Okay. If I could just clarify, was that a law firm attached to notes and sort of, yeah, it wasn't the...
That's the
certifying party.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I misunderstood.
Right. And it says, well, and correct, Your Honor, and the notes that I received from the person who mailed the documents that were attached, Tracy Johnson, was that it was inadvertently a mistake, and they accidentally had a copy of the certification, and they attached the real one. So they took the same certification that was provided under oath, and I've referenced those in here as date stamps, there are two of them, 35 and 19. But what they did was when they noticed the mistake, then the same law firm, not Ms. Wooten, said, oh, they made a mistake. So they tear the one off and they put the other one on. Okay? So we've got a certification that is totally...
What's your record cite for that?
Pardon?
What is your record cite for the statement you just made?
Dates 078, 079, 077. And I have read from it. Now, here's a follow-up to that. Ms. Richter says, they brought the original certified copy of the note with the certification, which has the original signatures on it from the bank. My response, and how does she know that? And the judge said, how do you know that? Ms. Richter, I know that because I personally called and spoke with Cooper Castle and have the note from Mr. Hill, in other words, his note is significant, right? And from the file, I have a complete copy of the file to be able to represent that, the court. And that is in Mr. Ho's notes. It says, well, I'm paraphrasing a little bit with the well and the R, but it says, that was in the notes in their mediation file made by Tracy Johnson, who is the same one that switched the notes on a certification certified out of Texas that had no attachments to it at the time.
Tracy Johnson worked for a law firm?
Worked for the law firm.
Under the bank?
No, worked for the law firm. So these documents were provided out of the law firm, first the law firm, then the second. That raises the question as to the integrity of the entire process. The court at one point said, well, we're at a disadvantage because we don't have Mr. Ho here. His recollection might have helped us somewhat. So we have a whole different... But we can return to that, and to move on, unless there are questions. Justice, Chief Justice Cook, you've asked regarding document production and that type of thing within 10 days. 3 weeks prior to this mediation, we sent an authority letter where we asked questions regarding if you're a third party that represents a beneficiary, please attach some documentation. We're asked to know, do you have restrictions? Do you have problems? Are you going to, things that we've got to deal with? What we see here is they show up and say, well, even though you paid no taxes, even though and they've seen the tax return, we have a strict formula that we've got to deduct 25%, so you don't qualify for anything. It had nothing to do with what the actual tax requirement was for the homeowner. And so we're saying, look, flexible. You've got to be a little bit more flexible than that. May I just give you the site on a very good something? A very good... it's a citation that we think is really important. I guess I don't have it in front of me.
But it's a supplemental citation.
Well, I have it, but I'm available for any questions. But just to close, this whole process was tainted by a falsified certificate that was manipulated through a lawyer's office, and you get these different certificates. It's different. It's the same certificate, but two different notes. They indicated in the testimony before the court that they provided it to the mediator. If they provided it to the mediator, I was in that mediation, and I was out two or three times with the mediator. I'm proud of these things. And I was out with my client explaining to him, he doesn't speak English, and we were back and forth. If they somehow slipped that to the mediator, I have no idea. I didn't know if they provided it, but I know I didn't get it, and I didn't see it, and that's what the transcript says. I have reference to it if you have any thoughts of me sharing that with you further.
Your time is up, but if you want to give the clerk a citation that you're able to find out.
Actually, it's an excellent citation regarding authority, what is required for the...
Very well. If you have it, you may provide it to the clerk and to your opposing counsel. Thank you so much, counsel. This case shall be submitted and will be in recess until the next call.